So these Sunday mornings, we're rediscovering who the real Jesus is from Mark's Gospel. And though we're only at the end of chapter 2, Mark has already given us about half a dozen pictures of Jesus' amazing power and authority to show us who this person really is. And in each case, Jesus has had the power to conquer all the enemies of mankind. And I'm just going to briefly remind you of these enemies as a way of introduction. Enemies that have plagued mankind all through history. But the message of Mark is that Jesus saves us from these enemies. Let me list them first. Pride, stubborn human pride. It keeps people from committing to God because we tend to think we don't need him. But Jesus is shown overcoming that as he calls the first disciples, the fishermen. He overcomes their pride and they respond immediately in chapter 1. A second enemy is the devil. Jesus has driven out demons in chapter 1. He is showing his power over evil. Thirdly, sickness. In Capernaum, when the whole town brought their sick to Peter's house in chapter 1, Jesus healed every type of sickness. A fourth enemy is sin. And with the puppets last week, our reading was the calling of Levi, the sinful tax collector. And we heard Jesus say, "It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners." And so he did. So pride, Satan, sickness, and sin are enemies. And today, Jesus is setting people free from another enemy. At first glance, it's a very surprising enemy. He sets us free from religious traditions. Because actually, like sickness and sin and the devil, religion can be another of mankind's great enemies. Now, we might not see that as clearly in this country, but if you were to go somewhere like India, you would see it. Religion can be a great burden to men and women. It imposes heavy demands on us. It says, keep these rules if you want to be right with God. And Jesus sets us free from that. So here in today's reading, Jesus demonstrates his authority over religion in three ways. And Mark usually presents his material in three points, which is useful for the preacher, but it's true. And in our passage, religion is represented by three things: fasting, the Sabbath, and the synagogue. And Jesus deals with each one, though we're not really going to learn about the specific religious traditions themselves. Jesus is simply demonstrating his complete authority over every religious tradition. These short stories are about him rather than about the issue. Well, the episode involving fasting comes first. So let me set the scene. Some people want to know why the disciples of the Pharisees fast while the disciples of Jesus do not. And the answer that Jesus gives us is in chapter 2, verse 19. Jesus answered, "How can the guests of the bridegroom fast while he is with them? They cannot, so long as they have him with them. But the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them, and on that day they will fast. No one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment. Otherwise, the new piece will pull away from the old, making the tear worse. And no one pours new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the wine will burst the skins, and both the wine and the wineskins will be ruined. No, they pour new wine into new wineskins." Fasting goes on, of course, in many religions. Muslims fast in Ramadan, and different churches encourage fasting through Lent. Jews were commanded in the Old Testament to fast on just one day of the year, the Day of Atonement. Only on that one day annually were the people required to fast. And yet for the Pharisees of Jesus' day, it had become religious custom to fast twice a week. The Old Testament, the Bible, required it once a year. Their religion required it twice a week, because that's the sort of thing that religion does. It adds burdens onto people's lives. It wants to make them religious. But Jesus has come to set us free from the burden of religion. It's always a difficult subject for me to preach on, religion, because I have a vested interest in people being religious. I want people to come to church, for example. I want them to pray more. I want them to obey the commands of the Bible more. And yet, I don't want these things to be imposed on you, or for you to think that you're put right with God by doing them. Rather, I want the Lord to work in our hearts so as we're soundly converted to begin with, having turned from our own way to Jesus Christ, and then for us to continue in our hearts to pray to him because we depend on him, to come to church because we love to be with his family, to read his word because we love to hear his voice. A fasting is a good example for Jesus to pick. Religion forces fasting on its adherents. And then people think, well, I'm pleasing God by my fasting, or I'm better than so-and-so because I fast. But Jesus wants to free us from that way of thinking. Our standing before God is not better because we fast or do anything like that. Now, he does say that there is occasion when it may be right to fast, and that is when you want to express your sorrow, a feeling of sorrow, verse 20. When the bridegroom, Jesus, goes away from the disciples, they will sorrow, he says. When they see him on the cross, they won't feel like eating at that moment. The Pharisees' religion says you must fast. Jesus says you should only fast if it expresses how you feel within. The outward act of fasting should never be imposed on us from outside. It should not be imposed on us by religion. Christianity is not about imposing religious acts on us. True Christianity is not really a religion in that sense at all. It's radically different to Judaism, say, which was the particular religion Jesus was dealing with. And he says that you cannot even just Christianize religion, which is what some churches try to do, actually, because if you put new wine into old wineskins, they would just burst. And it's not just fasting that Jesus is concerned about here. You could replace fasting with any religious act. Jesus is basically refusing to conform to religious traditions, which, of course, is a very hard thing to do, but very necessary. Because true Christianity is radically different to any religion, not just Judaism. While religion imposes rituals on its adherents and rule-keeping, true Christianity is about expressing outwardly the new life that Jesus Christ has given you on the inside. And Christians would only fast or do anything else if it expresses the new life that God has given us. So from this first episode then, and there are three episodes here, I hope we can see how radical and non-conformist Jesus is. He wants our faith to be shown as an overflow from what's inside our changed hearts, not through religious acts being enforced. Now, in our second episode, we find Jesus is just as radical about the religious day, the Sabbath. This episode begins in verse 23. So if you would look down with me, please, at verses 23 and 24, please, first of all. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the cornfields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some ears of corn. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" We'll just pause there for a moment. The Pharisees were very strict about what could be done on the seventh day, their Sabbath, our Saturday. Even going out of your house was not permitted beyond about a mile. Plucking corn was certainly not allowed on the Sabbath. That was classified as reaping. And reaping was one of 39 activities explicitly forbidden on the Sabbath. Well, Jesus' disciples have been reaping, or at least they've plucked a few grains of corn as they were walking through a field. How could they possibly do that on the Sabbath? The Pharisees want to know. They're breaking the religious rules. They're breaking with religious traditions. How can you tolerate this, Jesus? Well, Jesus says he can tolerate it because he is Lord, even over the Sabbath. His disciples follow him as a person, the person of Christ, and that is what counts. If they want to show their faith in him, it will be through other ways, like acts of kindness. Jesus responds to the Pharisees with a story from the Old Testament. And that's interesting in itself. He tells religious leaders that they should know the scriptures better in order to answer these sorts of questions about religion. He uses the Bible to counter religious traditions. So he's been asked a question by religious leaders to do with religious practice, and Jesus answers it by saying, "Have you never read?" Just look at verse 25 of chapter 2. Verse 25, he answered, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar, the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat, and he also gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath.'" So Jesus here refers to this story about King David, whose men were hungry, ordinary bread was not available to them, so the high priest gave them some consecrated bread to eat, even though that was against the law. And Jesus' point is simple. The Pharisees are being stricter than great King David. They are too strict about the Sabbath. So Jesus has to challenge their traditions. Now Jesus knows that we do need to rest, roughly one day in seven. There have been attempts in history to change that rhythm of one in seven. After the French Revolution, a new calendar was introduced with a 10-day week, but it only lasted a few years. People could not go for 9 days without a break. So Napoleon restored the 7-day week. And Jesus knows that 7 days is that God-given pattern. But he also wants to deal with religious rules. And the Sabbath is perhaps the most authoritative religious rule of all. In the Old Testament, there was the death penalty if you broke it. Well, the Pharisees thought that they could interpret it, but Jesus says, "No, I will tell you about the Sabbath, because I have authority over all religious traditions." Jesus is in charge. And what is his authoritative word about the Sabbath? How is his church to regard the Sabbath? Well, he says that the Sabbath was made for what? Man. Verse 27. The Sabbath was made for man. It's not there to be legalistically kept, as if that somehow earns our way into God's good books, as if we're keeping it for God. No, the Sabbath is there to be used to care for mankind. We find that in the fourth commandment about the Sabbath, which is concerned with care for the manservant and the maidservant, for example. You see, true religion is there to care for humanity. Christianity, if we can call it a religion at all, is here to bring freedom. Freedom from strict, killjoy, burdensome regulations. At its heart, Christianity liberates us. It sets men and women free to enjoy life as the Creator intended. Religion likes to put people in a straitjacket. Jesus frees us from the straitjacket. The Sabbath is made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And here again we see how our actions are to flow out from transformed hearts within. It's right to remember the Maker's instruction, 1 and 7, it's good for us. And if we employ other workers, we should not want them forced to work without rest. But we should not be burdened by Sabbatarianism, and nor should we burden others with it. Actually, the Sabbath that Christians should focus on is the Sabbath in the next life. The New Testament describes the promised heavenly land as our Sabbath rest. That is the place of true peace and freedom and comfort. It's the place where Jesus is Lord and will be seen to be Lord. The new heavens and the new earth will be seen to be under his authority, and everyone who is genuinely trusting in him will enjoy his rule there. That's the Sabbath rest. So please don't get tied up by strict religious rule-keeping or ritual. When you truly begin a walk with Christ, he sets you free from that kind of life. Our third episode ties in with the previous two. It's exactly in tune with them. That's the way Mark has written his gospel. Again, it's telling us about Jesus' authority over religious traditions and how personally relating to him is far more important than doing religious acts. The story is set on the Sabbath, because that is the religious day. The people present are the Pharisees, because they are the religious people. And the setting is the synagogue, which is the religious building. So once again, here we have religion underlined. There's a man with a paralyzed hand in the synagogue. And this is what happens in chapter 3, verse 3. So Jesus is present, and the Pharisees are present. Verse 3, Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Stand up in front of everyone." And then Jesus asked them, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" But they remained silent. He looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts. He said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. What a reaction. Jesus is really asking, is it religious to do good or to do harm? That's the question. Is it religious to save life or to destroy it? It's a devastating question, because the Pharisees' religion meant that if you were truly religious, you would do nothing to help this poor man, not even in the religious place of the synagogue. Religion has trumped having compassion on another human being, and Jesus will not have any of it. Once again, Jesus has to show that he, the Son of Man, the Son of God, has authority over religion. And that is what he does. I love this next bit, because without doing anything, he doesn't do anything because it's the Sabbath. He just gives the word. He doesn't touch him or help him. He just speaks and asks the man to stand at the front. So as every eye is fixed on him, it's great theater. Jesus does not lift a finger. He simply tells the man to stretch out his hand, and it is healed. The man is restored to health. He's restored to what God intended. Jesus shows his power and authority. However, when all that has happened, there's a conspiracy, because the religious establishment, the Pharisees, and the political establishment, the Herodians, conspire against Christ. You know, normally these two groups are enemies, but now they're determined to join forces to kill him. In effect, they are saying, we cannot have religion like this. We cannot have this man removing our traditions and religious rules. But Jesus wants to lift the burden of religion. He wants to set free and to save life. The word religion in the New Testament means something very different to what we normally think of. It's very rarely used, but I hope you see from today's passage how religion was radically changed by the Lord Jesus Christ. I hope you don't see yourself as religious, but rather as a Christian. In fact, the word religion is used extremely rarely in the New Testament, and when it is used, it means showing compassion. Take, for example, James chapter 1, verse 27. "Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world." Well, nothing about going to church there, nothing about pews or candles or organs or crosses. Yet many people find that hard. Generally, mankind would rather think of religion as building-centered. We go to a building to be religious. There's a movement, for example, at the moment for parishes to have prayer rooms. At first sight, it sounds fine. What church would not want to pray more? However, if the movement is really encouraging sacred rooms and sacred spaces because they are more religious than somewhere else that you could be praying in, Well, then I believe Jesus would question that. What's your picture of pure religion, a truly religious activity? I'm thinking of, say, choir boys singing in a cathedral. That is surely a religious situation. They're in a religious building, they're dressed in religious clothes, they're singing religious music. And yet that's not what the New Testament means by religion. If those boys were to go home and stop bullying other children, for example, then they might be acting religiously. If they showed care for their family, if they looked out for their neighbors, then they would be truly being religious. Because the real mark of Christianity is that we do some good to those around us. As James said, it's caring for those in need, widows and orphans. We should be doing good every day. That's the mark that you are a Christian. That's how you show outwardly that you have his presence inwardly. And so then, just to conclude, in Mark chapters 1 and 2, well, Jesus Christ squares up to all the perpetual enemies of mankind, your enemies and mine. He does it on our behalf: pride, sickness, sin, Satan, and even religion. He conquers them each in turn. He shows his authority. Well, then surely this is the man onto whose side we should get. He's the powerful and authoritative Lord who has defeated all that stands against us. Isn't this man the one we should join with? We'll find out how to do that in next week's story. Let us pray.